Welcome to the Who's Counting podcast with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Who's Counting. This is a podcast about all things elections, how elections are supposed to run, how sometimes they don't run the way they're supposed to, and what we as citizens can do about it. Today, we have with us a great American patriot. Her name is Marcy McCarthy. She's the chair of the DeKalb County, Georgia Republican Party. But more than that, she is an election integrity warrior. And Marcy, we're so grateful that you are here with us today to talk about what's going on in DeKalb County, Georgia.
Well, thanks for having me, Cleta. It's actually a total honor to be with you today. So when you reached out and extended an invitation for me to join you on your show, I was just honored. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. So Marcy, before we start talking about DeKalb County, Georgia, let's talk a little bit about you, about your background, and how you got into the business of trying to save elections in Georgia.
Well, I started off in the summer of 2020 as a vote review panelist in DeKalb County. And for those that don't necessarily know what that means, it's where you're adjudicating and duplicating absentee ballots that are in, you're adjudicating and duplicating absentee ballots in a bipartisan manner when the absentee ballots cannot be read by the scanning technologies. So during the summer of 2020, there was a number of absentee ballots because mail-in voting was the prominent thing to have happened during COVID. And everything pretty much went to plan, except it was a very long process because we had so many absentee ballots coming in due to the pandemic. Fast forward to November of 2020, I was a vote review panelist again during the general election for the presidential cycle. And so many things went awry. We deviated from all the processes and procedures that we took on in the summer. We completely abandoned any type of adherence to our election code, and we had total chaos. So fast forward, after the elections, I was speaking out during the elections that these things aren't going right because the duplication of the absentee ballots, for example, were being done by election office workers in an undisclosed location, and they were not being done by bipartisan review panels. We also had no checks and balances for the electronic adjudication, and we had a nonpartisan pair operating independently for 5 days, having the ability to adjudicate about 900 ballots and had no locks and controls on the bipartisan pair. And quite frankly, an independent nonpartisan pair is not supposed to operate independently of a bipartisan pair. They're supposed to be in tandem with. So there was just a number of problems. So fast forward after our 2020 elections, where chaos really ensued, and a lot of us didn't really know much about election integrity or such a term or any of the organizations that we have been involved in now with present day. I spoke out on a number of different ways. I testified in front of our General Assembly, both our State House and our State Senate. I spoke at CPAC. I went on Nightline. I went on OWN. I've been on John Fredericks many times over for a myriad of other different topics. So I became quite familiar in a crash course about election integrity. And my motto is really about restoring fitness, faith, integrity, and trust in our elections here in Georgia. And it has been a mission ever since that happened in 2020.
Well, we could spend a whole episode just talking about the problems of 2020. And, you know, it's so interesting, isn't it, Marcy, that no matter how many times we try to say we were there, we saw it, we know that things were done in violation of the law, the media and the left, they just call us names and act like we're crazy. But we know in our hearts, we know what happened. We know that there were things that were done in violation of the law. And like I said, we could spend a whole hour, 2 hours, days talking about that. But
you're right, Cleta.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the future and the now.
We have to talk about the future. And, you know, it's interesting just before we go on, but, you know, in Maricopa County in 2022, we saw and we had so many people as observers and poll workers, election workers that saw and documented their eyewitness accounts. So even though the media and the left try to say, oh, nothing was wrong with Maricopa County in 2022, we really have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who have documented eyewitness accounts in real time. So we know what we saw. We know it's there. So now we have to figure out how to stop it going forward, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's what we're going to be talking about today, especially in DeKalb County.
I do want to talk about 2022 in DeKalb County, because you witnessed an incident with a county commissioner race, if I'm not mistaken, where the machine count and the actual ballot count were different. Do you want to talk about that for just a moment?
Certainly. So during the primary, we had a commissioner's race. It was in the Democrat primary. And just so your viewers know, DeKalb County, Georgia, is the second bluest county in the state of Georgia. So this was a commissioner's race that was pretty much going to be destined for a runoff, because there was originally four candidates, and then one of the four candidates withdrew. So what we discovered the day after the election was we'll just say candidate three, okay, and her husband went to vote on election day. And when they were reviewing the ticker tapes and, you know, seeing how they did in the election results on election night, they realized that there were zero votes in their precinct. Okay, so if you take the husband out of the equation, you would certainly expect at least the candidate to vote for herself. But I would presume that her and her husband, really proud of her election opportunity, and would vote for both of them. So at the bare minimum, if nobody else would support her, the fact of the matter is there should have been two votes for her. So when they looked at all the other aspects, it turned out there were a number of other election day precincts that had a zero vote count for her. So taking a step back was like, well, what's going on here? So unpacking it a little further, on election night, we had candidate one. There was, like I said, what we discovered was candidate one won election night, and then candidate two came in second place, but nobody in that race got over 50.1 as per Georgia's law, because we have a unique law where it kicks everybody into runoff if we're not in 50 plus one vote. With that said, digging further into the situation, there was a discovery on some ballots without consistency that the candidate that was thought to be withdrawn was still on some of the ballots, but not consistently on all the ballots. So what happened was there was a seemingly programming error where they did not completely withdraw the candidate. So some types of ballots received the fourth candidate, but there was the only way to tabulate was for the three candidates. So the only way to really rectify the problem was to do a hand recount. And I'm really proud of the fact that all this was resolved in a bipartisan, nonpartisan type of manner, where it never saw the inside of the courtroom, where Republicans and Democrats, even though this was a Democrat race, worked together, because nobody could trust the outcome. So the decision was made by the elections board unanimously to go proceed with a hand recount. They did. And several days later, over Memorial Day weekend, we had a different set of results. And we had the pickup of several thousand votes. But specifically, the election outcome was candidate three became candidate one, candidate two became candidate two, and the unknown candidate four picked up about a couple hundred votes. So the fact of the matter is we had a different outcome after a hand recount, because whether it was an honest mistake in terms of the withdrawal of the candidate, they didn't do all the steps and procedures. We never could really confirm if there was LNA testing, which is the logic and accuracy testing, after the withdrawal happened, or was there manipulation unintentionally. I don't think it was malicious, and none of us really do. It was seemingly some type of human technical error, but it basically changed the outcome of an election. But what it did prove is that Republicans and Democrats and election offices can work together to have a fair and transparent election when you all work together in the spirit of having an outcome that you can trust.
Well, you know, I think that that's really the most important thing, because in this case, you were able to work together because Republicans were trying to make sure that the Democratic primary had the correct results. That's what we ought to see everywhere. We ought to have Democrats caring about the outcome as much as Republicans care about the outcome, not just about the outcome, but the process, so that everybody, whether you win or lose, can say, at least we trust the process. Now, I know that there was an effort to try to get some other races counted, hand count, to double check the machine count. And I often think that, you know, the people who think that don't trust the machines, if you had a random sample of a complete hand recount of a race, or in all the precincts in a certain race, or that kind of thing, if you really create not a risk-limiting audit, not just running through the tabulator one more time, but really have hand recount of the ballots compared to what the machine count showed. And if you knew you had to do that on a regular basis, on a random basis after the election, to me, that's the way that you prove that the voting machines are doing their work correctly. I think that would go a long way to restoring trust in the technology, at least.
I would concur with that entirely. Now, they did do a risk-limiting audit after the fact, and it was, but again, yes, I agree with you, and it had a perfect match outcome, but it's a lot of in controlled circumstances, and in theory, it's all, you know, randomly generated, but I get what you're saying. We did have some doubts because we really didn't have a clear explanation of what the problem was, and quite frankly, if candidate three didn't realize she had zero votes
in her own precinct.
In her own precinct, she would not have realized that we would never have realized overall there was a problem to begin with. Now, I want to bring up one other point because there's some interested individuals out there around ranked choice voting. So if this were in play and that eliminated us to have our runoffs like we do in Georgia, the machines would have kept counting, and maybe the fourth candidate that had really withdrawn could have been the ultimate winner. It was the last person standing. So we don't know if that would have happened, but it gives me great pause when I'm thinking about the many negatives that are associated with ranked choice voting. But specifically in this instance, and if I were to go testify, at one of the hearings that are kind of discussing it right now here in Georgia, that would be the example that I would bring forth is this could be your next race. This is not necessarily intentional, but it's where people, process, and technology somewhere, somehow broke down. And if the fact of the matter is you can't trust, mistakes happen along the way. But if the machine takes over entirely to determine the outcome, you're never going to trust the election. And you're going to have no checks and balances in order to do so when something does go awry.
Well, we have started referring to ranked choice voting as rigged choice voting because it's easily manipulated by programmers or whatever, and it's confusing. And it's amazing to me how people can come up with and there's a lot of funding behind pushing this ranked choice voting. I was looking today at they're hiring people. It's amazing that there is so much money being put behind trying to inflict ranked choice voting, rigged choice voting on us. But
I like to refer to rigged choice voting because that's exactly what it is. And if that were in place for that race here in DeKalb County, we might have had a candidate that really had no intention of wanting to go through with an election and be in office might be elected.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, actually. So let's turn to what's going on in 2023 that you just discovered in DeKalb County. Talk to us about what you have just learned over the last couple of weeks, really, about something that people in Georgia thought that had been outlawed by the legislature.
Well, first and foremost, it was stunning to learn on January 30th that Zuckerbucks 2.0 has arrived here in Georgia. And it's still the same pig with a new set of lipstick on its face. So the reality is we were all quite taken aback. My Board of Elections representatives, Nancy Jester, who's our vice chairman, and Anthony Lewis is our representative, were equally as stunned to learn this news at their board meeting on January 27th, actually. So,
and tell them what the news is. Tell them what the news is.
That DeKalb County has been named a center of excellence by the U.S. Center of Excellence, which is the CTCL rebranded pig. At the end, it's Zuckerbucks.
We'll talk about CTCL.
And our windfall is $2 million. That's payable over 2 years, $600,000 in 2023 and $1.4 million in 2024.
So
yes, we thought SB 202 is supposed to prevent third-party grants and funding of election offices, and it was supposed to equalize or create equity of all 159 county election offices. And the fact of the matter is the Democrats found a loophole in the way it was written overall. So SB 202 has a spirit of not accepting third-party grants and outside money. But the reality is, if it is facilitated and accepted by like a DeKalb County and then distributed to your elections office, that is legal by SB 202.
Well, I was looking
at... So even though there was outrage and pearl-clutching here, Cleta, they figured out and actually followed the letter of the law, not the spirit of it, but we're not here to have seances. When you go to courts of law, they read what's in the black and white in front of them.
Well, I was looking at that, and it says that the funds are not supposed to be requested or received by the election office, but then it says by a county election office. But apparently, this was applied for and received by the CFO of the county, the financial office, and then distributed to the county election office. But it seems to me that that might actually violate the not only the spirit but also the letter, since it's still private money that is the source of that funding. But hopefully, maybe we can get this resolved by the legislature or somebody. But I was particularly interested in the fact that this was not something that your Republican election board member even knew about. They had not discussed with the election board that they were seeking to obtain this $2 million. Is that right?
That is 100% accurate. So they had no knowledge when this application was completed in May of 2022. And mind you, the CFO asked to remain anonymous on that application overall, even though the chairman of the elections board, Deli Lohman Smith, is out there boasting the fact that we know election offices can't accept money and do any of this, but hey, I sent this grant application over to our finance, our county finance department, and our CFO filled it out on our behalf. And then the only organization the department that's only really going to benefit this type of grant, because it's specifically a shadow SOS, is our county elections department. But you know, our trash department, you know, might need these services or something like that. So the intent, right, of who it was intended for, I should say, was very clear of what it was intended to circumvent. And I know that sounded very horrible in my phrasing of everything, but well, I think you know what I meant.
Well, I do. But, you know, I really don't think that the law doesn't allow... I think there's a pretty strong argument that you can't do indirectly what you're prohibited to do from doing directly. And just having somebody else make the application on your behalf. And as I'm looking at this, it's interesting to see they say they need the money in order to perform basic functions, buying equipment, hiring more workers, all of that kind of thing. But when you look at they have to talk about what they did in the last cycle, the 2020 cycle, that they're most proud of. And there's nothing in what they say they did well that relates to actual voting. It's all about voter turnout. It's all about, they talk about getting people to vote early. They talk about creating pop-up events for people to register and vote. They talk about doing things on social media, reminding people there's an election. They don't talk about, hey, we were able to hire 5 more people so that they could administer the election properly, or we trained more people in the law. That's that one of the things that really, that's just shocking to me, but that is what election officials have started to believe, is that their job is voter turnout and not administering the election. I mean, have you talked to us a little bit about how that DeKalb County system worked in 20? You talked about the mess in the general election. There's nothing in here about what they're going to do to fix that, to keep that from happening again.
So a couple of things I want to bring up, because you brought up a lot of good points and many questions here. So it's going to take a couple seconds to unpeel. So first and foremost, since I was elected chairwoman of the, you know, of the DeKalb Republican Party, one of my things on my promises to DeKalb Republicans was to restore fitness, faith, integrity, and trust in our elections. And I took that incredibly seriously, with the first and foremost being appointing Anthony Lewis and Nancy Jester to their roles on the DeKalb Elections Board. And we have in Georgia our own method and law of how our election board representatives are appointed to be election board representatives. So that's another interesting aspect of how that has occurred. So it is a little bit different than any other county in the state, but it has tended to work out for the most part okay, except for our at-large member, who a superior court judge has the full authority to appoint. But with that said, the second part of that is we created a stakeholders group, and it was a group of individuals that was the election board vice chair and chair, our leadership in the elections office, her leadership team. And I brought in the Democrats came, and once we had our election integrity folks from the Georgia Victory and the RNC and the Georgia GOP and the Tea Party, I brought them to the table. So you also started seeing extensions of Democrats with Fair Fight there. So our meetings got a little bit larger, but I was always kind of driving the agenda. And I wanted to bring forth the things that I saw or became aware of that went wrong in the 2020 election to fix them. Because I knew if you sit there and try to complain about it, I wanted to come with my laundry list of things and my ideas for solutions. And what we did was work for 2.5 years to present day to carve out how poll watchers were going to be scheduled, to how vote review panelists were going to be scheduled, and what work that they were actually responsible, so that we weren't duplicating, having ballots duplicated in an off cycle, you know, location somewhere and not having it done correctly. We worked together, and all these things were documented, communicated. And if you ask my crew, they all say that our elections in 2022 went really well. So we started shifting gears to saying, now we restore fitness. Now we have to go on, be vigilant and ensure fitness, because we had built those relationships. We built the processes. And when something went wrong, as it did with the commissioner's race, we were able to work together to resolve it. So there was trust, proceed, people, process, and technology all working together. And there's some pretty amazing stories of success there. And I was really, really proud of that. So when fast forward to January 27th and 30th here, I was pretty taken aback that this had happened, and the brazenness of the chairwoman of stating that she knowingly circumvented the spirit of SB 202 in her own words, and our CEO of DeKalb County, you know, condoned the behavior and allowed a political appointee to use county resources at taxpayer expense to have a membership agreement created that creates a access to a consortium unvetted vendors, creating an unfair opportunity or no opportunity for vendors that might provide these other services. So we have hired service providers during this cycle. We have the DeKalb County Elections Office hired an amazing communications firm to do all the graphics and communications and constant contact emails. We didn't have any of this. So it was total, a lot of this stuff was chaos because there was a lack of communications too, and no method of a good mailing list of who the stakeholders were, who needed to know what and when. The scheduling was completely erratic and really managed by the Democrats because the election director at the time had no interest in doing it. So she just pawned it off on, you know, the Democrat. So we worked together, you know, and they did things correctly. So this is really, to me, very devious, and it broke a lot of the trust across the board. And my election board representatives feel very, they're very cynical, I mean, to begin with, but on top. But now you've added a whole layer of mistrust in a board that's supposed to be the governance of our elections. So here, 1 to 3 of our board members operated independently, inclusive of the chairman at the very least, operated independently of her entire board to further her own political gain and to put, you know, DeKalb on the map for leading the way in ensuring fitness, faith, integrity, and trust in our elections. But the fact of the matter, she did so in such a glaringly, like, violating the law of which it was written to prevent happening overall. So there is, and to your point of the different services that they can provide, we don't really know what's inside the dark envelope, so to speak, of this agreement, because there's a list of organizations, that, like a menu of organizations that they can go pick from, but there's no transparency of knowing which services that they're going to pursue and what kind of deliverables that they're ordered to give, and what kind of information are you giving to get those deliverables or services back. So we're presuming, because when you read the descriptions of some of these organizations, they're getting proprietary information about our election operations, about our voters, that is not public information. So where does the line cross in terms of privacy, procedures and processes that creates an unfair advantage in a county that is predominantly blue? Now, if we did this on the other side of the coin, on the Republican side of the coin, they'll be screaming that we did, you know, we're stealing their election. And DeKalb County has a history of not having great hygiene with their elections. Our voter list is horrible. We are usually the very last or second to last to report all of our results on election night. And because of some of the changes that they made in terms of procedures of the check-in process that they thought were going to be more streamlined and better, turned out to be the biggest nightmare, where they could get it done in a few hours. They took 3 hours of check-in procedures and tabulation time and turned it into 6 to 8. And put it all outside in 3 different locations. It created a whole set of new chain of custody issues. And the fact of the matter is, you had, you know, election poll managers separated from their counterpart in a private vehicles.
When was this, vehicle. Marcy? When was this? I don't know what you're. When?
This is a midterm election, so you know we've kind of got sideballed here with this whole grant. But the fact of the matter is, in Georgia, we have a poll manager is supposed to drive together with their deputy poll manager and take all the ballots and all the other things in to be processed and checked in a series of check-in steps.
At the county?
Well, at the county.
At the end of the day.
Yep. And then this go around, what happened was there was 3 locations distributed to the county. So that presumably made the drive time a little easier, but they don't necessarily work near, this is not necessarily their home. This is already a 14-hour day that turned into almost a 20-hour day for some people. So they drive to the check-in place separately from their deputy.
Okay, but now Marcy, but we're kind of getting off the subject of.
Yeah, we're getting off the grant. So
right.
We have some issues there. But back to the grant, and I apologize for deviating, but the grant itself is Pandora's box opening up in DeKalb County, because they have the ability to create subgrantors and refer other election offices, or however they would like to do it, that they can funnel more money through DeKalb County. And so DeKalb County is ground zero.
Let me just kind of interrupt right there to make sure everybody knows what we're talking about. because the Center for Tech and Civic Life, CTCL, is a leftist advocacy organization that has its goals and its values and standards of what it wants to see elections run in America. And it's run by a former Obama leader with former Democratic campaign operatives. That's who runs it. And they're the ones who received from Mark Zuckerberg $360 million in 2020 that they in turn paid to election offices around the country. And I just want to share with you some information that you actually forwarded to me that was work that was performed by the Foundation for Government Accountability and talks about how DeKalb, Fulton, and Cobb County received $17 million. Those three counties in 2020, they received $17 million from Zuckerberg through CTCL. A total of $29 million in grants to Georgia counties that Biden won, and an average rate of $7.13 per Biden voter in Georgia. By contrast, this is all in 2020, by contrast, the CTCL gave $2.3 million in grants to counties carried by President Trump, averaging $1.91. So that's $7.13 per voter from CTCL compared for Biden voter compared to $1.91 per Trump voter. And now then after Mark Zuckerberg said he wasn't going to do that again, and so many states outlawed altogether private money flowing to election offices, the Georgia legislature, it did kind of screw up the language because it said that that private money would have to go to the state and then be distributed equally across the state. But that, and particularly, that it wasn't supposed to go to one county or another. And so that's what's happened here is now CTCL is running this thing. We had Jason Snead on recently on the podcast to talk about CTCL's role and what this U.S. Alliance for Election Excellence is. And it's really what we're learning more about it all the time. But what they're really doing is they're now saying we're going to give grants to local election offices. And in return, what you're saying that they're doing here, counties are supposed to turn over non-public data about voters, about processes, about the election equipment, all the things that they say to us, to citizens, oh no, we can't share that with you. But this is how these leftist advocacy groups are basically infiltrating the election offices by saying, oh, you're an office of excellence. We're going to give you this money. Now you give us all of this data and all of this access. So it's really quite concerning. And tell us, what are some of the things that you've done since you learned about that when this announcement was made, and what you've done to try to get information, and what people are doing to try to stop this?
Well, there's a lot of people that claim to be outraged, but when you really ask for some help, they're not really available to assist. So let me just point that out. So it's sort of like, oh, let me help you, and then okay. But what I have done, based on several recommendations, I filed an outline that was for the State Board of Elections and filed a complaint there. I then filed the same complaint with the State Secretary of State's office and the Attorney General's office, followed up with all three, have had acknowledgement, not really in writing, but just on the phone confirmation that, you know, they're looking at all this. Yeah, there's a hierarchy in Georgia that the Board of Elections, the State Board of Elections is really the investigative arm. But remarkably, the General Assembly has never funded them in any budget cycle. So they operate on a zero budget with volunteers, inclusive of their board members and investigators. So your hierarchy, your number one, where you're supposed to go when there's a problem, has no money to do any kind of investigations, much less enforcement. So you're already falling on deaf ears in a dead end that takes an immense amount of time, and your election could come and go as it does to have any problems. And 9 out of 10 of their cases are dismissed because it's completely irrelevant by the time they actually make it to the docket. So that's really a dead end, okay? And then now you're in a very short window of a General Assembly that is only lasts about 29 days from beginning to end. We are March 6th. Today is February 17th. And Sendine is, I'm sorry, crossover day is March 6th. So if those bills are not in the hopper and have passed both houses, they go nowhere. So they're dead on arrival. And then you have Sendine on March 29th, which is the last day of session, and they'll let the clock tick. So the fact of the matter is there's a real urgent plea that I'm making that to our legislators that we need to have a bill that closes this loophole. So it's really clear, and we have to make it clear so that there is equity amongst 159 counties if they are able to receive that money, or so it's not interpreted in the manner that it just was here, violating the spirit, but following the letter of the law. So let's just clarify that for all parties.
I don't think they really follow. I don't agree that it follows the letter of the law, but go ahead.
I have different views on it, because if you read it verbatim, but there's conflicting language in the throughout the bill. So
correct.
It depends on where you read it and how you read it in context.
But there is a basic principle of law that government is not supposed to be able to do indirectly what it's prohibited from doing directly. So I'm just hoping that maybe somebody will come through on that
one. Well, I hope they can amend the language, or they are willing to do so. So that's a long shot hope as well, because there's not really an appetite for another SB 202 cycle, even though we're in an off cycle year. Most people that are been elected or reelected have no interest in tackling this because they already did it in 2021 and lived through a nightmare of it. And then still got some of them got reelected or elected on this cycle. So there's not really an appetite for it. The other aspect is filing some type of lawsuit, finding the right angle to go in there and get an injunction. That obviously takes lawyers and a lot of money, and finding a plaintiff that actually has been damaged in the process. So that's another, you know, uphill battle. Who wants to take that on? I know there's a lot of folks out there that have chum in the water and are interested, but they've got to find the right plaintiff to actually have a case that's not going to get kicked out. So the clock is ticking. So have they gotten the money in DeKalb County? I'm not entirely sure, but are they going to get it in the next 60 days? I would say presumably yes. And do they now have a funnel in because it's set a precedent for the other 159 counties and the ones that are more blue with that referral to Clayton County and the actual original grant application? I wouldn't be surprised if there is a whole nother cohort in the works right now with Clayton County as our next door neighbor being the number one blue county. So we've got to do a bunch of things. We need to fund our Secretary of State's office so it doesn't enable our county election offices to engage with shadow SOSs to have influence over their elections, whatever their ideology is, because that's not fair and that disenfranchises voters and give candidates unfair advantages and also creates mistrust in the entire electorate process. We have to investigate those that have done wrong, but that takes time and money, and we've got to fund the Board of Elections at the state level, and we've got to actually fund our state Secretary of State's office. So, you know, we can't be tempted by taking this kind of money when we're not offering it ourselves. Let me give you some other stats in DeKalb County that should be real interesting for you. DeKalb County absolutely wants more voting. That's a mission of the Democrats. So in Georgia, we have 19 days of early voting, and we have no reason absentee voting. And we have now drop boxes that have been codified that are inside the early voting precincts. And then you can still vote on election day. In DeKalb County, we have 191 precincts where you can vote. It's not free for all, but you have to vote in your assigned precinct. That's still not good enough for Democrats in DeKalb County. We had 17 early voting locations in the general and the runoff election. Now, let me just tell you how much that costs per week. That's $17,000 per precinct early voting location over the course of those 19 days. So it's 17 grand a week. The average election worker in Georgia is about 60, 65. They're working, they don't split the shift. So they're working anywhere from, 12 to 16 hours a day. And by the end, nobody shows up. So you're really taxing people that are not, and they're seasonal workers. So when we had a runoff come up, as we did with the Senate cycle, And they wanted to start voting the Wednesday before Thanksgiving in DeKalb County. They did. They had to figure out how to staff it. And then the rest of Georgia didn't start voting until some places the Monday after. So that's actually really not fair. We need to actually standardize when we start and stop voting so everyone has an equal opportunity to vote with a voter ID to ensure that their vote counts and is secured. But more importantly, that we aren't starting the race at different points in time and expecting an outcome that we can all trust.
Well, you know, one of the things that people don't really stop to think about is it's really hard to staff when you have 19 days of early voting, or in the case of Virginia, 45 days of early voting. Being able to find observers and people to work the polls, that's really very hard. I think everybody ought to do what South Carolina did. Every state should do what South Carolina did last year, where they passed a bill that has 14 days, two weeks of early in-person voting, and categories, only certain categories of people can vote by mail if you meet a certain criteria. And you're not going to be in the state to vote at any time during those 2 weeks of early voting. And everybody else votes in person. And they vote in person in those 2 weeks. The early voting stops, I think, the Friday before the election so that they have time to get organized. And to me, the less we can rely. You've seen what happens when you have the flood of absentee ballots, mail-in ballots. It's impossible to have proper chain of custody. It's impossible to have transparency. It's impossible to protect the secret ballot, protect voters from being having people pressure them on how they're going to vote. So I believe me, and what you just said about being able to have staff the elections with the workers and observers, I mean, it lends itself to chaos and not an orderly, trusted election. And we're not trying to keep anyone from voting. We're just saying, let's be reasonable, people. Let's make sure that we're looking at the whole range of what you need in an election. And having billionaire-funded dollars, private dollars from leftist billionaires flowing into election offices doesn't really inspire confidence, does it?
No, it really doesn't at the end of the day. And we have to have fitness, faith, integrity, and trust in our elections, Cleta, because when we don't, we've seen what the last 2.5 years are like. It's been tenuous at best, and the shoe could be on the other foot overall. And we're all Americans at the end of the day, and we do elect our people for a set number of terms. Being elected is not an elected up office is not an entitlement. And we have to just make sure that the status quo is not there and taken for granted. We have to inspire competition. That's what we are, you know, and we have to ensure people are accountable. And then when the laws are made, we have to also make sure that they're written in a manner that isn't interpreted one way to one individual or party versus the other. And then they take the best that serves them.
Well, I think, you know, in the final analysis, we just had the Super Bowl not too long ago. And we all want to believe that the teams get out there and fight and compete and compete and do their best. But we don't want the referees being paid by one side or the other. We want to make sure the referees are calling the plays and calling and enforcing the rules, and that they're not beholden to either team. So to me, that's the best analogy. And Marcy, you've just been such a warrior for election integrity. I just thought it would be great if everybody could meet you and hear from you, because you're a real inspiration. And thank you for all the things that you do. We really, really, really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate all the work that you do, Cleta, and in great awe everything that you have done and continue to do. So thank you for having me today.
Thank you so much. And that concludes this episode. We hope that you've enjoyed it and enjoyed meeting this great patriot, Marcy McCarthy. Be sure to subscribe, share the podcast with your friends, and subscribe on any of the podcast platforms. And we invite you to join us again for another episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, so we can learn how to save our elections. Thanks so much for joining us. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Please help us fight big tech censorship. Like and subscribe to this podcast and be sure to share it with your friends. You can become part of this election integrity movement by signing up to join the Election Integrity Network. Go to whoscounting.us. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Election Integrity Network.